Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano. Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Ether. Today, I have Simona Pop and Mark Balin on the podcast. Simona and Mark are co-founders of Bounties Network, which enables anyone to create projects, collaborate, and get paid for doing great work in any domain. Thanks for joining me today, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Excited to chat.
Yeah, same here. So I'd like to start a little bit by just diving into both of your backgrounds in general and kind of the history of the Bounty Networks. So can you each kind of tell me how you got involved in crypto and Ethereum to begin with?
Sure. So I'll start. I was working for a tech company, essentially focused on supply chain sustainability and international payments. When I kind of started researching crypto for a talk that I was given at this event in London, just about the alternatives to, the cumbersome status quo that we were dealing with. And so I came across a few articles on consensus media and swiftly realized that there were people already building these alternatives. So that for me, I just felt compelled to just join them immediately. And so my journey into crypto kind of began and has been going at turbo speed ever since.
Yeah. And similarly for me, I mean, it was kind of 2015 and I was building, a lot of kind of POCs and MVPs for random projects I was interested in. One of the things at the time was around these sort of peer-to-peer networks and the idea that we could build more robust applications on top of those. And I kind of fell into the crypto space, realizing again that, a lot of the values that I was looking for were things I saw in the community, but also, there was this whole wealth of sort of like greenfield space and all these new types of applications that could now be built. And so I kind of was lucky to get an internship at Deloitte, and they had a team called Rubix in Toronto that was building kind of a lot of different applications for clients and internally and things like that. And so I got to dive headfirst into smart contract development in 2016, which was a lot of fun back then. But it's been exciting to kind of see the ecosystem grow and develop kind of through the last bull market and into the bear market and kind of seeing how things have changed and evolved.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I always like asking that question because I always joke. I feel like back in the 2015, 2016 days, I swear there were only like 50 to 100 of us around and we thought it was much bigger than it actually was. And even today, I mean, I feel like it's a lot smaller of a community than people actually realize. So it's kind of fun to talk about how people got involved. So, kind of knowing that and then how you both got your start in the Ethereum ecosystem, I feel like everyone kind of comes in and they have a couple initial ideas they want to embark on. And it seems like you guys have done that with Bounty Networks. Can you just talk about kind of how the idea for Bounty Networks came about?
Yeah, sure. So initially, I had been building an application around smart contract security attestations. And it was sort of the idea that you could ask people to sort of either verify that your contract is correct or, figure out any bugs and kind of highlight those if they existed. And so what started as that project sort of slowly evolved into a project around actually incentivizing people to do that and incentivizing people to sort of start reviewing your smart contracts and things like that. As I was building it, it became kind of clear to me that what I was building was obviously very generalizable. But not only that this sort of bounty construct was useful in all of these other different, kind of verticals or transaction types. And so, we launched the project as a protocol back in 2017 and kind of grew the team. And, I was lucky to have Simona join us in February of the following year. And since then, Simona's done a really fantastic job at kind of growing this idea of the Bounties Network away from just code or graphics or these sort of productivity tasks, but thinking about, what incentivizing any task, like what if you wanted to put money behind any sort of action, what would you do? And so that's kind of where we've seen a lot of the expansion happening since then is around that.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of this idea. I've been thinking for years of how bounties can expand. It sounds like you guys are doing that. And we'll dive into a little bit here at a point in how you guys see kind of bounties and the bounty networks evolving in the future. But I think there's a ton of really cool ideas that can happen around this. So I think that's kind of a great background of how both of you and the idea in general got started. And I'm sure most of the listeners are aware of the concept of bounties, but, you know, just in general, the idea is that anybody can post some kind of financial incentive for work. And then once it's completed, the person that completed that work was paid. That's kind of the very base example of one. So Simona, can you kind of quickly walk us through your platform and exactly how it works on Ethereum?
Absolutely. And I think it's probably one of my favorite things about bounties is just how simple and flexible they are. And I think you touched on it. The mechanism is really quite simple. Somebody creates a bounty for a task that they need fulfilled. Somebody, one person or multiple people submit to that bounty. And then the submission gets accepted and a reward is released. And so creating the standard bounties protocol and going live with our Explorer in 2017 has really enabled us to test all of these, that particular simple format across so many different verticals. And I think the fact that the dynamic is so simple just applies to so many real life use cases. And so what people will see when they come on the Explorer is this wide range of tasks, this wide range of also of difficulty levels, where we really aim to, provide new means of income for a whole host of different people. You know, it's not just developers, it's designers, it's writers, it's translators, it's artists, it's musicians. We just had a couple of bounties go up for crypto law. So it really is a perfect little mechanism to incentivize and organize action across the board.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. And you mentioned income. Do you think someday, or is at least your vision, that people could essentially, you know, maybe not live off the income of bounties? Potentially some people could, and there are people that do that through freelancing work now. But do you see it as definitely becoming kind of a viable side income for people that have the extra time?
I definitely think so. And I think the more we go into the more the work dynamics evolve, and the more more traditional jobs tend to disappear, the full-time work tends to become something that needs redesigning, because again, as we're seeing with a lot of remote work that we do a lot of in the crypto space, you can see that people do want to participate in meaningful projects, but also, you know, have that ability and that flexibility to travel, to go to, work during the hours that they feel they are most productive, rather than having that dictated to them. So that's kind of in certain areas, but of course, in other areas where you have economic disparity, where you have a lot of turmoil, potentially socioeconomical, you could again create very sustainable alternatives for the people there and give them that access to the global pool of work and the global pool of resource that was not there before. So that access, it would have featured several different hoops and a lot of cost, and potentially would just not have even been an option for a lot of audiences and a lot of populations.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very, very cool point. I mean, the reach of this is vast and could be very life-changing in many different economies and different parts of the world, which is the exciting part, at least to me, about it. And, you know, we talk a lot on here about, you know, resolution of markets. We talk a lot about Augur and how oracles come into play on Maker and things like that. So obviously, kind of in thinking of a bounty, if we think the most basic example, say I put up, you know, say I want someone to design a new ETH hub logo for me. So I put up a bounty. I say I'll pay 20 DAI for this if someone completes this. Someone kind of commits to the bounty, submits their final work, and, you know, ideally I say, yep, this is good, and I pay you. One question I have is kind of, how does the payment and escrow ecosystem work on the bounties network? And is there any type of dispute resolution, as in, say, someone completed this work and gave it to me, and I said, for some reason, I just didn't pay them? How does that process work?
That's a great question. So it's interesting. This is something we've been looking at, you know, really in depth since, you know, I would say the end of 2017, when we launched, we kind of realized, okay, this is a problem we're going to be facing in the long term, and we should start working to fix it. And so we actually spent a fair amount of time doing, you know, kind of crypto economic research under what we called the Delphi Project, which basically was trying to look at, okay, well, how can we build a sort of incentive-based system that kind of ensures that people, you know, that can be used to resolve these disputes basically in a way that's fair, that doesn't place, you know, our incentives as the arbiters, if that is to be us as marketplace operators, in a way that's aligned with the bounty issuers. And this is sort of what we see very commonly on, you know, most marketplaces, Web2 marketplaces. You know, this is really common with PayPal, that ultimately when you go towards resolving disputes with these platforms, they almost always will side with the people who have the money. This is something that's ubiquitous with PayPal, and they're really notorious for it, but it's true of Airbnb, it's true of Uber. And so this is a challenge, obviously, for the freelancers who, you know, who need to get paid and who not only sometimes don't get paid at all, but oftentimes don't get paid on time. And so for us, what we're trying to work towards is solving those problems. The easiest way to solve that is the you know, solving the problem, not of dishonesty necessarily, but of, you know, people just delaying their payments, people who, you know, issue bounties and who mean well, but ultimately maybe got delayed or something. And so building a system that enables them to pay quickly and efficiently is something we've been working towards. And, you know, by forcing all of the users to actually lock up their funds directly in the escrow in the bounty contract, that, you know, basically not only is a signal that they, you know, their money is where their mouth is, that they actually intend to pay out, that they have the funds to pay out. But at the same time, it makes it really easy such that when they, you know, receive a submission that they like, they can immediately click accept and the money automatically gets dispersed. And so, you know, we are never holding on to those funds. Those funds are only ever stored in the smart contract. And so ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, there is the ability for them to not accept work and still use it potentially. And so that's kind of where we would need the idea of Delphi for. One of the things that has become clear as we were working on Delphi is that, you know, on the one hand, there's a very pressing challenge around, you know, resolving disputes in the way that sort of justice is determined. It's often very contextual. It's a very difficult problem to solve in a way that's like sort of provably fair. But the other element, and this is something I think is really more important and kind of highlights where our head is at right now, which is that ultimately, you know, the kind of distrust or cheating that you might see on a freelance website happens when the people on both sides become very commoditized, you know, where your transactions don't feel like you're talking to an individual, a human. You know, they feel like you're talking to a machine, someone you wouldn't really feel bad screwing over. And so one of the things that we're looking into right now is, you know, how can we create, you know, real human connections between the people who are issuing these tasks and fulfilling them, such that they actually will feel intrinsically motivated to not screw each other over by virtue of, you know, feeling guilt, you know, because they wouldn't want to, you know, do things that are, you know, terrible to people that they, you know, have connections with. And so that's kind of where our head is at and where we're starting to experiment, because we think it actually has a lot of benefits, auxiliary benefits of, you know, beyond just avoiding arbitration, but also realizing that, you know, arbitration is this like very, very, very hairy problem that has not been solved over a very long period of time. And so I think it would be naive for anyone to kind of proclaim that they have, you know, provably fair, you know, some provably fair, you know, solution to the Oracle's problem that is, you know, civil resistant and non-plutocratic. I haven't seen any of those, and I think it would be naive for anyone to kind of make those proclamations. And so in the absence of that, we kind of have to think of, okay, well, what can we do right now with the user base that we have? And the best thing we see is to motivate them to connect with each other, to not want to screw each other over. And we actually see that works quite well for us in our community right now, where, you know, when you have those tighter connections, the incidence rate of disputes is actually really, really low.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with everything. There's a lot of good stuff there. So walking back a little bit, I fully agree with you. No, there's no one has figured out this Oracle problem yet. And you put it well, like they're all very unique use cases. And I think that's interesting, your concept of kind of connecting people. And I totally agree. You're going to be less likely to not pay someone if you kind of know them and you've interacted with them. And there seems to be a lot of, you know, attempts at identity solutions, maybe not full on identity solutions yet, but kind of like social identity. I know Threebox, I don't know if you guys have talked to that team yet, but they're kind of coming up with this concept of profiles that you can attach to a wallet and then you can use them in all kinds of different dApps. So things like that hopefully coming online will help, you know, at least put a face to a name. Not everybody wants to be identified on a decentralized network, but at least kind of give some personality to people that are opening and eventually closing these bounties out. So not an easy problem by any means, but sounds like you guys are diving into it as much as you can.
Yeah, and the interesting element too around, you know, anonymity is that, you know, you can actually have, you can build trust with anonymous individuals by, you know, interacting with them or by transacting with them. And this is, again, something that was always really interesting to us is, you know, how can we enable people to not necessarily reveal the nuances of their public identities, but at the same time build up a reputation. So that's something we're also thinking about, especially in the context of creating human connection that goes beyond just, you know, facets of your identity that you might have in common with other people, but, you know, the way that you've actually interacted with them historically, you know, and having that serve as, you know, a sort of base layer for building that connection.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a very interesting thought and kind of applies to a lot of applications we see out there where you've got interacting with anonymous people, but there's ways to build trust there, I think, and we're just starting to embark on that. And I think this is kind of a perfect segue into, I mean, obviously there's a lot of freelance websites out there. The ideas of bounties are, you know, thousands of years old. This isn't a new concept by any means. So I'm kind of curious, you know, why did you guys think that Ethereum is a great fit for this? And just by the way, I agree with you, but kind of what does Ethereum enable that these other websites don't?
Yeah, so I mean, one element and the kind of most obvious one is, you know, you can pay people around the world close to instantly with, you know, far lower transaction fees. That's going to be true. That was true of Bitcoin. That's true of any blockchain. And so that's obviously true of, you know, any kind of marketplace that's built on top of these systems. Ethereum in particular offered something that was, you know, a little bit more than that. On the one hand, it offered, you know, this sort of plurality of assets, right? You know, we could integrate with Ether and any ERC-20 token, and automatically we would have a majority of the top 100, you know, cryptocurrencies on CoinMarketCap, for instance. And so at the time, you know, it was sort of a no-brainer that, of course, we would, you know, move to where the market is moving, which is this, again, the supporting this plurality of tokens on Ethereum. The other element is that Ethereum obviously lets us experiment very quickly. You know, building this on a, you know, and having us be a fiat intermediary, it would have been a far larger investment. It would have taken far more time to build if it wasn't just, you know, me in my bedroom, but if the initial version of this product was built on a fiat-based system, that wouldn't have been possible. But finally, you know, with a smart contract platform like Ethereum, we can have funds stored in escrow where you have these very clear payouts. You can have the contributions to the bounty coming from everywhere, but you can also have the smart payouts to various individuals based on, you know, how much work they did, and have that happen kind of dynamically on the fly. And so, you know, smart contracts support that and enable that. And so that's, again, another reason why Ethereum was a no-brainer for us.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I mean, just the simple concept of smart contracts enables so much when we think about bounties and the reach that they can have as well. You mentioned a little bit, you know, as also being able to accept different types of tokens and whatever Ethereum offers there. At this point, if I were to go create a bounty on the network, what can I choose as far as tokens go? Is it just ETH, or have you guys implemented other ERC-20s or DAI, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so you can pretty much use all of them. ETH, of course, and then any ERC-20 token. So we've had plenty of bounties in DAI, in SNT, which is the status token, and we actually minted quite a few community tokens as well. And what I mean by that is one of the main things that we do, because we focus on this very broad access internal terms of incentivizing all sorts of different types of action, we deployed a number of community networks throughout or across the ETH global circuit. So we started with the Moksha coin at ETH India, and where we created this token that obviously has no monetary value, but it is used to reward people for their actions within or for the duration of the hackathon. We then kind of built on that and created the Berlin coin, which we launched at ETH Berlin. And that was very much aligned with this idea of how could we incentivize action across Berlin, so not just limited to the event, to the ETH Berlin event, but rather manage to engage and organize people at a city level. And we saw this and kind of spill out into, you know, Gnosis used it to get some user testing for their Gnosis Safe. We had somebody sell a single, so a piece of music for 1.69 Berlin. So really seeing these interactions between individuals and between communities was really, really interesting. And kind of learning from that, we now have the Boost token that we launched in partnership with UNICEF Ventures and UNICEF France that we're going to pilot at ETH Denver. But again, from that, it's something designed to incentivize long-term behavior of individual contributions to, you know, improving communities locally, globally, whilst accruing a digital public acknowledgement of these actions. So again, there's no monetary value, but these tokens will grant recipients value-driven benefits, like, I don't know, early access to events or mentorship sessions or incubator style support from UNICEF Ventures and so on. So really experimenting with all of these different crypto rewards has given us a lot of insight into just how powerful this incentivization of individuals and communities are. And then, of course, we will broaden the tokens that we accept. We'll probably move into Bitcoin and so on. So there's a lot of scope there.
Yeah, that's a lot of cool experimentation. I mean, we've been talking a little bit on ETH Hub, and we just kind of launched our donation page the other day, and we're eventually going to be using, I mean, your platform and Gitcoin grants and all that good stuff to put out bounties for content. So we'd definitely like to talk to you about kind of the experiments that you've done so far. And we've had some ideas around, you know, instead of just financial incentives, what if we offered some type of unique token or NFT to give to people? They might value that a little bit more than, you know, getting 5 or 10 DAI. So I think that's really interesting that you're talking about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, it's to me over time for the tasks that kind of sit out there for a little while and people have up, I'm sure DAI is going to become a very used medium for on the platform, because you don't have to take the volatility risk of ETH sitting out there for a couple months or weeks or however long the task takes to complete. So I think that's a good background into just kind of like the logistics of the network and how it works. So I want to dive a little bit into, you know, the usage at this point and then moving into the future and integrations that are happening. And I know Gitcoin, which is personally one of my favorite projects as well on Ethereum, is building its bounties on top of your platform. So can you just talk a little bit about how that works and how your platform enables other applications to build on top of it?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we were really lucky in, you know, in 2017 when we were kind of preparing to launch, I got connected to Kevin and, you know, we realized very quickly that our visions were very much aligned in the sense that, you know, we realized that building interoperable and open marketplaces was, you know, the future, that this was something that wasn't possible before blockchains, because, you know, we would have to be administering the bounties or the funds or something like that. But now we had this ability where a smart contract could be used, you know, and we have this sort of like shared interface that we can post to, that Gitcoin can post to, and that other platforms as well can use. And so this is something that, you know, we started experimenting with Gitcoin, and they actually adopted, you know, the bounties protocol in January of 2018, sorry. And so since then, it's been really interesting. We've been kind of exploring what, you know, what does it mean for you know, to have this interoperability, the idea that bounties might be created on one platform and fulfilled on another. And so over time, though, what we've started noticing is actually this, the resurgence of not just other marketplaces that are sort of sharing this, you know, pool of liquidity, as it were, but actually this addition of this sort of like other counterparty, which is the what I would call the like the DAO dApps. And these are, you know, like the Aragons of the world, which are starting to, you know, want to integrate with bounties as a way of actually deploying the capital that they have, you know, under their organizations. And so, again, this is kind of the promise of the, you know, standardization, you know, using Ethereum, is that you can have these dApps that, you know, don't necessarily work together, don't even necessarily have to trust each other, but they can all kind of agree to use this shared interface and shared standard. And that's obviously to the benefit of the users, because, you know, if I'm a user of a DAO, and we just want to, you know, create bounties, have them, you know, float into the ether and be completed by whoever on whichever platform. And, you know, people aren't really opinionated about that, because ultimately if the work that gets completed is good, then that's all they care about. That has some strong benefits for them, because, you know, the protocol and the network kind of takes care of the advertising of that bounty for them. The bounty automatically populates onto all these websites. So that's something we've been exploring over the last year. It's a little bit of a slower moving process than, you know, our expansion of the product. But nonetheless, it's something we're excited for, and it's something that we really believe we believe in, and we want to keep driving forward, because ultimately, you know, we recognize that that's what benefits our users. And we know that, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, the best incentives for, you know, our incentives as a marketplace aren't necessarily, you know, aligned with the idea of being open or being interoperable, that actually our incentives are aligned with being closed. And that would in theory help us have more, you know, sort of defensibility from competition. But we realize that obviously comes at the expense of our users and the quality of the product for them. And so, you know, ultimately we're trying to make this step of and set a precedent that marketplaces on Ethereum should be interoperable and should be working towards collaboration with their competitors. And so we're kind of hoping that others in the space will continue to do that, both in the sort of bounties and freelancing world, but also just in general for all the other marketplaces building on top of Ethereum as well.
That makes a lot of sense. And maybe some people listening haven't used either Gitcoin or your Explorer on your site. Could you talk a little bit about how the integration with Gitcoin works? Like if I wanted to go on your Explorer on your site, will I see the Gitcoin bounties there and vice versa on their site, and kind of how that interoperability works?
Yeah, exactly. So from a technical perspective, you know, they interact directly with the Ethereum blockchain, and we do the same. So any bounty that gets created on Gitcoin will automatically end up, you know, in our smart contracts. And so we'll just be listening to those and automatically hear of them. So we don't ever actually have to interface with Gitcoin itself. We just talk to the smart contracts, and, you know, they do the same. But it's exactly like you said, you know, if users go to our website, they can filter by bounties that were created on our network and on our Explorer. They can filter for bounties created on Gitcoin. And this is something I think we're going to start to see more and more of as more platforms join, is the idea that, you know, users might be able to filter from, you know, to see bounties that are on all of the different platforms at the same time, or be, you know, looking at more critical views into particular, you know, communities or groups or things like that.
Nice, nice. And have you seen interest from other companies outside of Gitcoin to integrate on your platform? And, you know, how do you see bounties being able to play into other dApps kind of future company strategies?
Yeah, of course. So we've been always, you know, very much welcoming everybody with open arms who's interested in integrating and, you know, having those conversations, doing the hard task of actually, you know, working through the integration and actually figuring out what the feature requests are and all that stuff. One of the biggest impedances for us has been ultimately, you know, I think the technology is still very early. And so because of that, different teams have different visions for, you know, how things should be implemented and, you know, different product roadmaps. And so I think that's been one of the impedances, and that's kind of slowed down, you know, the process of kind of widening the adoption of the protocol. But at the same time, you know, we've remained incredibly kind of hopeful that the protocol stuff would take off, and that we would see more usage of bounties, not just as a mechanism for, you know, other marketplaces, but kind of in the way that you know, the DAO example uses, that bounties are just kind of one of the features that are used within their product, and they're not the whole product itself. You know, the product isn't just the marketplace, but that bounties are used to kind of accelerate whether it's particular activities within the product and incentivizing people natively to actually perform certain tasks. And that's obviously a possibility, but also just enabling sort of more indirect usage of bounties and outsourcing of tasks within other applications. You know, and we see this constantly, is that many applications, many dApps, their core mechanisms are always based around these incentives, right? These very basic crypto primitives of, I want to give someone money for doing this. And ultimately, that is itself just a bounty. And so, you know, there's no reason that that can't live within this kind of standard interface, and that it can't be supported. And ultimately, like I said, again, benefit the users that are, you know, going to be taking advantage of it.
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite things about your product is there's a hyper focus right now on crypto being money and open finance. And a lot of people kind of take jabs at crypto of, hey, there's no real world use cases outside of those. And well, I definitely disagree with that. And I think bounties in your platform definitely kind of puts that to rest, in my opinion. It's kind of this obvious real world use case that's out there, and you guys have built it. And in my opinion, as scalability comes online and more users start to adapt onto Ethereum, you guys are going to see an explosion of growth. And, you know, kind of to that point, in my opinion, you guys are starting to think of very unique ways to use this platform. And as far as kind of giving back and helping in the real world, I saw that you recently used the platform to help pay people clean up dirty beaches in Manila. So I'd love to talk about that, kind of how that idea got started and how it's going for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So we essentially, as I mentioned, for us, 2018 was definitely the year that we just started looking at these real world use cases and actually going out and testing them. And it's one of the main reasons why we went live to Mainnet in 2017. And I think with the bounties for the oceans, which is what this project you mentioned is called, we initially, I had the idea whilst talking to a company called Parlay for the Oceans, who were doing a whole bunch of cleanups and then turning the plastic into fiber and making products out of it. And so this idea came, and I thought, okay, well, how could we use an incentive mechanism to essentially you know, motivate people to go and perform cleanups, whether on a, you know, on a short-term basis or on a long-term basis, with a view of, again, rewarding them for their action, but also promoting positive long-term behavioral change. So on World Ocean Day last year, we created this Bounties for the Ocean in partnership with MakerDAO. And so we set the payout at 10 DAI and made it very clear that we would reward individual verifiable cleanups wherever they were in the world with 10 DAI. And what started happening was we started getting a lot of submissions from pretty much everywhere, and, you know, different parts of the US, the UK, Tasmania, Venezuela, Romania, and the, I mean, that was amazing in itself, but even more exciting was that most of the people who were fulfilling the bounty did not have any kind of prior experience with crypto. So for a lot of them, this was their first experience with a wallet, with earning crypto, with doing something or, you know, contributing to the blockchain or were getting involved in the space. And what you saw was this very excited then perspective on the possibilities that this opens up. And so many different people joined our community as a result of that, just being genuinely, you know, impressed or in awe of the fact that there was this real world use case for it. And so from there, we kind of started thinking of, okay, well, what would happen clearly, most of the people who had fulfilled the MakerDAO bounty were from, let's say, what you would call traditional kind of geographies, right? So, like I said, a lot of US, a lot of UK, a lot of Western Europe. And so we started thinking, okay, well, what would happen if we created a pilot in a country that isn't traditionally, socioeconomically prepared to adopt all of the new technological advances. And so we started looking at Manila, mainly because the Philippines have a real problem with trash. And Manila Bay has been, in dire conditions for many, many years, where the trash just accumulates. And, no matter how much they clean it, it just keeps coming with every monsoon, every swell of the seas. It just gets brought back in. And so we decided to run this pilot in the first weekend of December. But more than that, so we knew that we wanted to reward people for the cleanup, but we also wanted to have local partners that would help close the loop. So, and what I mean by that is it was important for us to find a partner on the ground who would recycle the trash. So, one of the issues and why they have so much trash is because the trash collection isn't exactly a well-oiled machinery. So we knew that we needed a partner to recycle the trash, and also a partner who would help people convert the crypto that they were getting into fiat. Because again, we knew that, okay, some of them might keep it, but some of them might genuinely need it to pay bills, to buy goods. So it was important for us to make sure that those kind of partnerships existed to create real value rather than just going into to kind of see whether our platform works. And it was an incredible experience. We actually filmed a documentary that we will release in the next few weeks. There is a trailer that we released a couple of, I think maybe a week ago, just documenting our experience and what the environment is like, what the experience was like to interact with the individuals and the communities around Manila Bay, who are, traditionally fishermen communities who are seeing those very traditional jobs like fishing stop being sustainable because of the dire condition of the ecosystem and the habitat and so on. So you're really seeing this this role that something like the Bounties Network or the bounty as a format can play in an environment like that. And this is just one example. You could then replicate it and apply it to a whole host of different communities, of different initiatives, of different causes. But one of the key things that was really, really important, creating this potential new means of income, because it was a bounty, we also had contributions to the bounty pot from individuals, from other projects. And again, that pot will only ever be used for those payouts, for the verifiable cleanups that individuals or communities do. So you immediately shine this great big light on a whole a whole section that was in complete dark up until now. So as we know, with charities, for instance, you have a lot of the funds, you don't really know where they go and how they're allocated and whether they even make it to the intended destination or the intended cause. So it really showed us a lot of very, very interesting things. And it also taught us a lot about the importance of local factors, of local communities, and of having those partners on the ground.
That's amazing. First of all, I think I could talk about this for hours. I mean, I think this is one of the most viable long-term use cases of Ethereum, in my opinion. I write about this every once in a while and kind of had this personal aha moment, I would say, probably 2, maybe 3 years ago now, about, you know, people are motivated by financial and social rewards, right? So if you can give people some type of incentive to make the world a better place or make themselves a better place, mm-hmm. that's going to enable a lot. And your network and Ethereum in general is an amazing platform to do this. And I think you guys embarked on this and I said, wow, someone's actually doing it. This is amazing. I've kind of had ideas around this where, I mean, you guys are doing the beach recycle thing. I had kind of thought to myself, wow, you could pay some people to recycle as opposed to just throwing it in the trash. You could even incentivize people to work out and lose weight. You could incentivize people to quit smoking. You could incentivize people to drive safer and not speed. Like, there's so many things I think that your platform opens up, and I'm extremely excited to see you guys starting to experiment with this. So one interesting thing you brought up there is, so to me, when I was thinking about this, kind of had this revelation years ago in thinking about this, and Cint is one of my favorite apps on Ethereum as well, because it basically incentivizes people. While it started, you could pose a question and then you could pay a little bit of fee to someone that has a really good question or answer to your question. This is kind of a very basic example of a bounty or a financial incentive. So there's a lot of experiments going on. And one of the things I struggle with when thinking about this idea of incentivizing people to recycle or better themselves or the environment or whatever it might be is verifying that act. And you mentioned a little bit about verifying that people were actually picking up this trash and they were on beaches in Manila or whatever they might be. How did, I'm sure that was a huge challenge for you. How did you guys solve that?
So it's, for now, it is very much a photo with proof of the cleanup at the cleanup location, with the coordinates on the photo and also a date stamp. Now, as we get more and more sophisticated and as we evolve the product, we've had conversations about, you know, having that geolocation automatically there or through AI and being able to recognize that location and identify trash and so on. But for now, we essentially in Manila, we had people taking the ones that had smartphones, people taking selfies of themselves with the trash, or and this is one of the things that we actually found out when we got there was that a lot of people did not have smartphones, but the solution that we found was to have teams and have a team leader with a smartphone, and they would be able to take a photo of the whole team, and then we would identify the individuals. So it's kind of like an in-between Web 2, Web 3 situation right now. It works very well for the moment. I mean, you know, we almost want to see what people would try or how they would try to scam it. So far, we have had one submission that was essentially a photo from Google that would obviously not meet the requirements and therefore would not be accepted as a suitable submission.
Yeah, I'm sure as time goes on and more tools kind of come online for Ethereum, I'm sure maybe you guys could leverage the Foam protocol somehow to prove location. The Austin Griffiths burner wallet for XDAI, which, you know, enables basically feeless instant payments in DAI, which people are obviously going to want because it's stable, versus ETH, which has volatility. It seems like a lot of these tools coming online will benefit you in the long run.
And this is the idea. It's all about collaboration. And I think it's very, very important. And it's why the Ethereum ecosystem is so great. And we've had so many and continue to have so many great partnerships with a lot of the projects in the ecosystem, because exactly what you mentioned, you know, there is this very focus, there is this intense focus on the value and on that collaboration to just generate extra value versus, you know, keeping things very, very separate.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a great experiment that you guys are doing there. Well, it's not even an experiment anymore. You guys are actually doing it. I'm excited about the documentary. And next time that you embark on one of these projects, I'd love to be involved. So kind of keep me in the loop and I'll do the best I can to stay involved in that. But I think this has been a great background on, you know, both your history, the history of Bounties Network, how it's being used, what you guys see for a vision in the future, which I think is very very exciting. So I kind of want to shift a little bit more just into some more general questions. Usually at the end of the episodes, we kind of talk about, you know, a little bit more fun or the ecosystem as a whole. I'm definitely curious. I mean, your application has been live for a while now and kind of went through the explosion in the Ethereum network over the past couple of years. Obviously at the end of 2017, the network was full and we had scaling issues. Can you just talk a little bit about what your team learned going through kind of this bubble last year?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I think one of the relevant things that is kind of necessary for us to talk about when we, you know, in the context of like scaling or, you know, these kind of impedances, right, is that one of the things that we've learned and we've kind of come to realize is that, you know, the biggest challenge for us isn't the fact that Ethereum can't scale, you know, or that the blocks get full on very rare occasions. Most of the issues actually come around, you know, the onboarding. And so this is something we've become increasingly focused around is, you know, how can we simplify the process for people to onboard themselves and to learn, you know, to really understand that they have administration over their funds, that, you know, they don't have to trust anybody. And that's usually a very powerful, you know, aha moment. And so we work really hard to have those moments, whether we're there in person or, you know, trying to, you know, simulate them through the product itself. But one of the other things we've learned that's a little bit more bounty specific is kind of around this idea of, you know, incentives being used to enrich our connections to each other and to enrich the relationships we have, right? And this is something I think that's kind of a counter narrative to what we hear a lot in the crypto space, which is this kind of cold view that, you know, you don't trust anybody and that, you know, you have to pay them or steal people's funds or slash their funds, you know, as a result of that. But it's this very cold view on humans and their interactions. And so one of the things that we've learned in our approach has been very much around not necessarily using incentives instead of human connections or instead of trust, but actually using those incentives to, you know, kind of increase the strength of that trust or of those relationships. And again, this is something we've seen happening constantly where, you know, companies are starting to use bounties and incentives to actually incentivize their community members and to use that as a way to bring them into their organizations and to bring them in and kind of make them feel like they're a part of the cause itself. And so, again, that you see this idea of the transaction itself actually strengthens the relationship between the person, you know, issuing the bounty and the person fulfilling it. And so this is where we really see, you know, the puck going that, you know, things aren't going to become more cold. That, you know, and more kind of, it's not necessarily going to become more necessary for us to have these kind of stake-based incentives or slashing conditions or things like that based on bad actors, but that we actually can build a more humanist system that thinks about the needs of the individuals and encourages them to actually connect with each other and trust each other sort of more natively in the product.
Yeah, that's very interesting that you're talking about that. And I agree. Your first point on user experience, I mean, the onboarding and offboarding is by far still the hardest thing. And I think as a community, we need to set out to solve that user experience problem, right? And a lot of it happens. The hardest part, in my opinion, is, well, there's a lot of hard aspects, but people don't want to have to worry about their wallet seed phrase. They don't have to onboard from fiat into ETH. But I had a very interesting conversation with Taylor from MyCrypto last week, and she was talking about they're thinking about kind of having a wallet not only kind of show you everything you're involved in. So of course you would log in, and I'm a big fan of this idea, but your wallet should show you not just what coins you hold, but also kind of what apps you've interacted with. So in the bounties network, how many bounties you have open or what you're working on. But even taking that a step further is your wallet should identify opportunities for you. So you've got all this ETH maybe just sitting in your wallet or DAI or whatever it might be. It should kind of say, hey, you know, there's some bounties out here. Do you want to go fill them out and make some money? Or do you want to go lend your money over on Compound? Like, that would be a cool way, I think, for you guys to interact with some wallets in the future as well.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something we see a little bit already with the mobile wallets, which, you know, have a lot of those kinds of portals already where they're driving, you know, they have users who are excited to dive into the Ethereum ecosystem and are looking for these applications. And so, you know, those mobile wallets have been a great way to, drive users towards dApps that are live, that are, you know, ready to be used, and that can actually help them earn funds and earn an income. So, you know, that's something absolutely that we're excited about. And you know, we're happy to, you know, we work constantly with different wallets as they, you know, come online, and, you know, we're happy to continue doing that in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like mobile wallets is where everything's moving. And obviously the wallet's at your gateway into this system. So they need to be solid and identify all the options out there for the user. So I definitely agree with all those points. Just wanted to kind of transition. I usually ask everybody because there's so much happening out there and we just focused on, you know, the Bounties Network for the last 50 minutes. But what are some of your favorite projects in this space kind of outside what we've been talking about so far?
For me, I think it's got to be, Maker. MakerDAO is one of my favorites. We've done a lot of work with them. And in 2019, we're going to be embarking on a whole host of new initiatives. So we'll be sure to let you know about those because they're incredibly exciting. And again, they're very much focused on this broadening of access to crypto and also to the ecosystem and for people from all sorts of backgrounds and geographies. And then the other one I've really kind of been focusing a lot on some art stuff lately, and it's Dada. And I think their whole idea of, again, you don't need to be an artist to go and draw or join a particular conversation on their site is very, very interesting, where, again, it just empowers the individual. And I think it's one of those things that's very much in line with what we do. It's empowering the individual to try something out, to go and do something, to get involved into a community, to go and participate in a project, to go and express themselves. And I think that's one of the main things that we've seen in this space that's been wonderful is this move towards getting communities and getting individuals involved by asking them for their opinion, asking them for their viewpoints, asking them what they would do, this technology can enable that. So yeah, those have got to be my favorite too.
And for me, you know, it's interesting. I kind of, my kind of favorite projects are constantly changing. The ones I'm really into right now are, you know, we're seeing this kind of like resurgence of these small teams working on the different, you know, ETH 2.0 clients. And that's something, and, you know, those teams I think are really interesting and I'm kind of keeping a close eye on them because, you know, that they're not only the future of the protocol, right? And you know, these clients are going to be hugely important. But it's interesting also because, you know, a lot of these teams are on the newer side and are kind of adding a fresh perspective, I think, to a lot of the protocol development where, you know, many of the protocol developers in Ethereum, you know, I remember they've been around since I joined, you know, the ecosystem a few years ago. And so I think this kind of addition of fresh perspectives into the protocol engineering work, in particular, you know, with more teams that are not necessarily funded directly by the Ethereum Foundation or which operate kind of independently of them. I think that's really exciting. And that's something kind of I'm keeping my eyes on in particular.
Yeah, I agree with all that you guys said, and especially the E2.0 teams. And as far as funding goes, we need to make sure we keep those teams funded and all these interesting teams popping up that are vital to the future of Ethereum through either grants or bounties or whatever it might be. Well, I think this has been an awesome conversation. I think you guys have one of my favorite unique platforms on Ethereum, and I think it really shows the power of what we're building here. So I would just say keep up the great work, and I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Same here.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and at zazzle0x.